So yeah, my name is Matthew James Gray, but you can call me Matt. It's great to be here with you guys this morning. I met a few of you here and there, partially through basketball. So my son Chesser plays basketball on Saturdays against your mob quite regularly. And look, just while I'm here, you guys have some really great kids. Just seeing the way that they play and the attitude that they show, it's not in my notes, but actually Sam yesterday was really kind to my daughter and my little boy Callum, basically took on a de facto babysitting role just because I was too busy looking after Chess. And so you have some really great kids. I've actually preached here before, but it was at night for a youth thing that James Bowden was putting on here. So looks nicer during the day. Anyway, apart from that, what do you need to know about your guest speaker day? Well, I'm a lecturer at Table. I'm in church history and theology. I run the divinity program there. I go to Edwardstown Baptist Church. I was an elder at Glen Osmond Baptist for nearly a decade. I live in Pasadena with my wife and my three kids, and with my parents-in-law. My father-in-law has dementia, and because of his worsening condition a few years ago, they had to leave their house. They were living in Melbourne, and they had to pack everything up with our help and come over and live here. So they've been with me since. So anyway, today I'm going to talk to you about a passage many of you will probably know well, and that's John 3:16-21. So it will be up on the screen, hopefully, but if it's not, you got phones. Oh, there it is. It's good. Okay. So here's the passage. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because they've not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light, because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. So it's worth starting just by talking about John 3:16, which is a pretty nice verse. You may have heard it before, occasionally. I think actually because John 3:16 is such a familiar verse in Christian circles, we kind of forget just how amazing that actually is. It's pretty amazing. God the Father sends God the Son, Jesus, into the world because he loves the people in it. You and me, all your fellow congregants, everybody. And it's even more specific. He doesn't just come because he loves us to kind of give us a cuddle, although that's awesome too. But he also comes so that they would not perish, which suggests that if he hadn't, we would have. The Bible begins with God putting us into a perfect world, doesn't it? And we mess it up badly, like really badly. And it's not like some of us do that, all of us do that, every last one of us. By the time Jesus arrives in the incarnation, we'd spent a really long time just messing it up and getting better and better at really being bad at it. To the point where it is, where it and us were completely beyond any hope of fixing it ourselves. It reminds me, actually, I mentioned about my parents-in-law before. My parents-in-law had to leave their old house in Melbourne. I said that before, but because of my father-in-law's condition, his dementia, which causes memory loss, it meant that his ability to keep the house just under control had completely started to fall away. You know, like, he just couldn't remember, is this a thing that I should hold on to or should I let go? You know, that kind of stuff. And like his wife, my mother-in-law, had been trying her best to kind of manage that and everything, but the house, to be quite honest, was just a mess. My wife, Leanne, she could remember when it wasn't a mess. She could remember in her head how great it was once. She could remember seeing tables and chairs and that bench top over there and that kind of thing that were now piled with papers or with washing or with this or with that mess. These were two old people who just couldn't keep up with it anymore. And so we drove over to Melbourne and we just started tidying it up with them. Somebody had to. It was hard work, but it needed it to be done, and they needed somebody else to do it. And that is what Jesus has done with us. That is what Jesus has done with all of us. None of us can get our mess together, let alone anybody else's mess. We can try our best, but the piles upon piles of mistakes, regrets, misunderstandings, he said this, she said that, mess in our lives is beyond anything that any of us can fix. It's enough to darn well kill us. And what's remarkable is that God didn't look at our mess, safe in heaven, and say, "Wow, sucks to be you." Instead, he said, "No, I will become one of you. It does suck. And I will take all that pain and that injustice and that mess you've piled up, and I will place that mess on my shoulders. It'll kill you. So I'll take it to the cross and I'll let it kill me instead. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life." Now, when I was in my parents-in-law's house, and I'm cleaning it and everything like that, I actually gained a new appreciation for what God had done in Jesus. I understood this passage in a better way. Because in helping them, it was like a mini version of what Jesus had done, you know. And it gave me a chance to show my parents-in-law God's love for them by fixing a problem that they could no longer fix themselves. Thinking of that, it helped me to understand Christ's sacrifice for me, for you, for all of us, in a new way. Sometimes I think it's only in the messes we face and the cleaning up that needs to be done around us that we can truly understand what Christ has done for us. In fact, I actually think sometimes the Holy Spirit works in us in those situations, in the messy situations of life, to teach us afresh what Christ has done and to show us how we can live out his story in the story of our own lives. Now look, I could just sit down now because like that's a pretty awesome verse and everything, but it keeps on going, right? So, and it's actually, it just keeps on getting more astonishing. John goes on, "For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him." And what I find amazing about that is how easily, how justifiably Jesus could have come into the world to condemn it. Right? It's not like we hadn't made a mess of the world that he made. It's not like we completely, you know, ruined his creation, the creation that he had specifically given us the job to take care of. Right? Maybe. So if he wanted to, he could come in and say, "Look at this mess. What were you thinking? You had one job." He could do that. And it's not like it's any of it's his fault. Right? I mean, if he wanted to, he could come in as morally righteous and perfect. And he could say, "You completely messed this up. And you know what? I've been clean and perfect in this whole scenario." He could do that. When I got to my parents-in-law's house, we could have complained. We could have criticized them for the mess they'd got themselves into. None of it was our fault. We weren't the ones to blame. We could have said, "Hey, this is your fault, your mess, you clean it up." But as if we could do that. And like, really, what would it have actually accomplished if we did? Criticism, complaining, ridicule. None of that's going to clean a house. It wasn't going to empower them to fix it. It was only going to strip away from them their last shred of dignity and their last little shred of hope. No. So we looked past who was to blame. And we said, what's our ultimate goal here? What do we really actually want out of this? What we wanted was to get their stuff sorted so they could leave and come and live with us. What we wanted was them to be free. Now, don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that we didn't have some pretty tough conversations with them. Conversations where we had to talk to them about, listen, you need to let that go. That you can't take that. That's actually weighing you down. But we didn't have those conversations to tie them down into thinking that they were hopeless. We had those conversations to liberate them, to give them hope. We didn't come into the house to condemn them, but to save them. And that was the attitude that we had to bring. Now, they had to play their part too. When we said, you have to let that go, they had to let it go. And we have a part to play, John tells us, and that is whether we'll accept the help that God has offered. John goes on, whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because they have not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. So we've basically got three options here. The first is to pretend that there's nothing wrong, that there is no mess. It's not a pile of clothes climbed on top of another pile of clothes. It's art. You know, that kind of a thing. We could go that way. You know, my parents might have been able to hide a sheet, like put a sheet over a pile of mess. They could have done that. But eventually, there is just too much mess to keep on hiding. And it all comes out. It all comes out, doesn't it? The second option is to recognize, yeah, there's mess. But to look at Jesus' solutions and to dismiss them and to think that they're just not going to work. that the mess is just too big for him to solve this time, to not believe in the name of God's one and only Son. Now from there, well, you might just give up. You might just try to put up with the mess anyway. Or you might try to run away from the mess. Even though, pesky thing about mess is, even if you try to run away from it, usually it seems to come with you, because the mess, as much as anywhere, is in ourselves. Or we might try to, again, one more time, let's just try to fix it ourselves. Which has never worked before. Or we can take the third option. We can forget about who did what and why they did it, and it's his fault or it's her fault, or they said and I didn't, and well, I never. And instead, we can reach out our arms, fall on our knees, and say to the God who does not condemn, Jesus, I know you could give me a big lecture on this. I also know you don't want to. You just want to fix it. You just want to fix this. You just want to fix us. And I know that you can fix it. You fixed far worse than this. Which is kind of the whole point of the whole thing, isn't it? He's fixed far worse than this. And so, we're humbly calling on you and asking you to help us, to help me, to help us get out of this mess. And we believe that you can. We believe in the name of God's one and only Son. Now, you know, this passage goes on to show us how Jesus actually does that. How does he fix it? I mean, one way that isn't directly mentioned in this passage is obviously in the cross. And in that, pretty good way of fixing things. But the cross is actually pointless if you don't have the resurrection. Okay, so you kind of need that too. And all of that, even like as great as the cross and the resurrection is, all of that couldn't fix you if you couldn't ask for it to fix you. If we weren't given the chance to believe in his name, if we never heard his name at all. Right? Jesus has made the solution, but until people accept that solution, it's not going to help them out much. Right? So the passage comes to this. It says, this is the verdict. Light. Light has come into the world. Jesus comes in, and the way he really fixes things is he pulls off the hiding sheets. He opens the curtains, and he shines the light on all the mess. And that is actually the only way things get fixed. By seeing it. By naming it. Naming the mess, and then starting to deal with it. It's hard, it's yucky, you find stuff you never knew existed and you never wanted to know exists at all. It is scary. It runs the risk of shame. You have to face the fear that even though John told you that Christ didn't come to condemn you but to save you, maybe this time you hear this voice. You have to face up to the voice that tells you, yeah, but not this time. No, this one's too bad. This time's different. It's the exception to the rule. My mess is the exception to the rule. God can fix everybody else's mess, but not mine. You have to fight against that voice. And that takes courage. It takes courage to let Christ shine the light on all that's been going on. it takes courage, but like, what's the alternative? John tells us the alternative. The alternative is people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. Nobody likes to air their dirty laundry. And so much of our effort can be spent protecting some puffed up reputation. So many back of the car park conversations, so much gossip and slander when nobody else is around, so much protecting my good name, protecting the church's good name, protecting this, so much let's just keep it to ourselves, so much fear of if this ever gets out. It's actually really exhausting. It's really exhausting pretending that I or you or we have all got it sorted when we all know none of us do. None of us have it sorted. And it's also ultimately futile because eventually it all comes out. So why live like that? It's no way to live, hiding in the shadows, scared about the light that is inevitably coming, and you know what? Is inevitably there to help you. Instead, John says, listen, guys, there's a better way here. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. Now, what I want you to notice here is really interesting. What's the difference between the two types of people and their responses to the light? What's the difference between them? What isn't the difference? It's not that one group of the people are evil and the other ones are awesome. It's not that one of them have their mess all sorted and fixed and the other ones are trying to hide it. No, John doesn't say that whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they've done was totally okay and that they were the good guys and that they never did anything wrong. No, because the whole point is that all of us, the world, have done something wrong. That's John 3:16. God sent his one and only Son to save the world, and that's all of us, so that all of us would not perish. No. The ones who come into the world aren't pretending that they handled it all just perfect, that they never put a foot wrong. They're saying, I know God saw it. That it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. I know, you know, that whether anyone else heard that backyard conversation, God did. God saw it. God saw it, and he saw it when we got it right, and he saw it when we got it wrong. And the only way that we're going to fix what went wrong is together, with each other, in honesty and transparency before each other and before him. Why would we try to hide? We're going to try to hide it from God? No, he's seen it all. He saw it all. Jesus, help me. You know everything that has happened, everything I've done, everything I haven't done that I should have. And you are the only person who can fix it because you have seen it, you know it, and you have come into the world to fix it. So fix it. So fix me. Fix us. Notice that in this passage, there is a direct link between the light and truth. Tell the truth. Give up the pretensions and just say what's actually been going on in my life. Come to Christ, come to his body, the church, in your midst, and know that you can say, let's talk about it. Be honest. Now that means you might have to have the hard conversations, but you don't have the hard conversations to condemn, but to save, to fix it. I don't know where you find yourself in the midst of a sermon like this today. Maybe you sit here and you're just confused about your life. Maybe you're confused about all kinds of stuff and you just wish you could know what the hell is really going on. Well, the best way to find out what's going on in a darkened room is to open the curtains and let the light in. To let Jesus shine his light on it. And that starts with a pesky old word, and that is confession. We're just telling what's been going on. It starts with telling the truth to yourself, to each other, and to Jesus. The moment that changed everything for my parents-in-law wasn't the moment we walked through their door. The moment where everything changed for them was actually a few months before when we were on the phone. And they named out loud how hard things had got for them and how they just couldn't cope anymore and how they needed to be free. That would have not been an easy conversation for parents to have with their daughter and son-in-law, you know? That took guts. It takes guts to admit when we can't fix things ourselves and when we need help. And the wonderful promise of a passage like this, the wonderful promise is that God, Christ, will honour that courage. He doesn't come to condemn you, to condemn anybody else. He comes to save you and to save them. He comes to fix it. Let him come. Let him in. Open the curtains. Let the light shine in. And he will. He'll fix it.